The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of the process at 302-864-8643. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show today, big fucking win. Yeah, it was just the Spurs, but it was a big fucking win. Sixers win their fifth straight and are now in sole possession of the seventh slot in the Eastern Conference. That's what champions do, baby. That's what champions do. While that's going on, Doc Rivers is fucking collapsing with the Milwaukee Bucks. And we have Mike on Mike crime within the Rights to Ricky Sanchez community as Mike O'Connor takes a straight ahead, just fucking shot at Mike Levin, and we will get Mike's answer on the pod. I did mention Kinetic Skateboarding, and as I've mentioned before, some of my favorite stuff that Kinetic has, though they have sneakers that you get at Kinetic, can't get anywhere else, Vans, Nike, Converse, all that. I love the Kinetic brand stuff. I've been in Kinetic a bunch of times, and I've never seen their shop dog, Augie, who passed away. And they did a bunch of Kinetic gear with Augie on it, their shop dog. It is fucking great. T-shirts with Augie on it. They have these mugs with Augie on it. They have skateboards with Augie on it. Coffee mugs, water bottles, and what's the thing called? What's the Yeti with Augie on it. If you like T-shirts with fucking dogs on them, go to kineticskateboarding.com. Use code DaveSilver for 9.1% off your first order. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy that signs his autograph, just Mike with a smiley face. That is one Mike Levin.
Wow.
What a win. Come the fuck on.
Lot to be excited about.
A lot.
Lot to be upset about.
Don't start talking about how many minutes Maxi played. We're not doing that.
No, it's double overtime. That happens.
Okay. All right. Nothing to be upset about.
A lot of good stuff.
A lot of good stuff.
54 from Maxi.
On a night when it seemed like the jumper wasn't going at all, right? Do you have 54?
54 minutes, 52 points.
Okay. By the way, it wasn't like he just got hot. It wasn't like the jumper wasn't falling all night, mid-range and the three. His ability to get that ball in the fucking hoop before anybody touches it is insane. Even with Wembanyama there, he was able to do it. And I still think, I don't know how you reverse that goaltending. But
I agree. I think that's not a reversible call. But the Sixers, just anytime there's a close call at the end of a game, it's not going our way.
That's
really
his fault.
Just not going to happen.
I'll take it.
Man, he's gotten so good, Maxi.
Yeah.
His offensive game is just in so many different ways. Like, the efficiency's gone down because he's not getting as many wide open shots. He's become the focal point of this offense. But just a wider variety of shots and responsibilities and pressure on him to carry them, especially without no Embiid, no Tobias, no Lowry in this game. I mean, he's raised his usage rate to over 28% while having the lowest turnover rate of his career, which is already marked by how little he turns the ball over. He had, in 54 minutes, one turnover. On the night,
That's
one turnover
crazy.
In 54 minutes.
That is nuts.
And also, obviously, a career high assist rate now that he's the full point guard here. Absorbing his ability to absorb contact while going full speed on a floater is just so unique. He had one finish where he split defenders in midair for an N1. That was insane. A gorgeous backup for a layup that Buddy found him on, a crazy drive and finish past Wemby with like opposite hand with English. And then in overtime, Wemby just starts dropping or switching onto him. And Maxey looks at that and goes, already one of the best defenders in the league, and goes like, yeah, no problem. And just finishing with ridiculous execution and confidence. And he just kept turning the corner, man. Turning the corner. Big bucket from the off the pass from Nick Batum, which we'll talk about to tie it. I just 52 points on 41 shots. You're right. He wasn't hitting from the outside. He wasn't hitting on jumpers. He was trying to those step backs. He wasn't really going in. And it was just like he got downhill. He got to the line 12 times. He got that floater up. He gets it up off the glass with English. I mean, just an incredible game. Finishing a plus 14 in 54 minutes. Ridiculous. A ridiculously good game from Tyrese Maxey, who is going to get paid as much money as they can possibly pay him this offseason. An excellent, beautiful, wonderful man.
The thing I liked best about it is the shot wasn't going, but man, did he just fuck in the fourth quarter and in overtime. Honestly, a lot of the game, but as the game got tight, he just wanted it. Do you know what I mean? Like, he took control of the game. He said, shot's not going in, doesn't matter, give me the ball, I'm going to get a bucket each and every time. He didn't shy away from shooting it. I think he probably shot, 8, 9, 10 threes? He kept shooting them, you know? Yeah. He kept shooting them, and his ability, even with, by the way, second night of back-to-back, 50 minutes, double overtime, did not look gassed a little bit, maybe on a couple of the threes that hit front rim in general, but even in, was it in overtime when he got fouled and hit the free throws, or maybe it was the end of regulation? Like, those are free throws that tired players miss. He just wanted it and went and got it. And those are nights that lead you to believe, okay, yes, he can be second best player on a championship. He can be primary wing player on a championship team. Doesn't have to happen all the time, but like, we've seen him score a lot before, but I just felt like watching this game was a little bit of a different thing for him in terms of just taking the game by the balls and fucking winning it. It was an amazing game by him.
Incredible. I mean, nobody could say with him, like, it's just fun to watch him turn the corner against anybody. They know he wants to go right, but then he can finish with either hand around the rim. You know, there were a couple sort of, let's call them lazy or tired legs moments when he's just like, all right, I'm just going to run right into Wembanyama and they'll call a foul and bail me out. And that didn't happen. But I mean, to play that many minutes, you know, it was beneficial that he took 6 shots last night against Memphis. Luckily, they didn't really need him for much. He only played 25 minutes. So this was the, like, go get us a win there, pal. Nobody else is going to do it. And he was just excellent. It kicks ass.
Yeah.
It kicks ass. There were so many iconic moments in this game that we're going to forget in a career of just excellent, grab your fucking team, drag them across the finish line type moments. I love it. And I love the Batum inbounds play kicked so much ass. And good for Maxey for so many times. And end of game moments when they're like, I just got to get a shot up, but he could get all the way to the rim and he didn't pull up. He knew exactly he could get to the rim with enough time and he got there. Easy layup. Unbelievable. Let's talk about Ricky Council, man.
How about, first of all, I give Nick Nurse credit. He had him on the floor in the closing moments, as a closing lineup. He had Ricky Council.
Didn't put him in until the fourth quarter. Played 0 minutes going into the fourth quarter. Came in the fourth for a little infusion of energy, and absolutely give Nick Nurse credit. This is not something that Doc would do. It's not something a lot of coaches would do because you go with your guys. But like Ricky, his first play is like 3 minutes onto the court. He's face to face with Wembanyama, hits a high floater off the glass over him. A crazy play. He played both overtimes, had a great weak side cut off a Maxey drive for an up and one. on an up and under, which was sick. And he's told Maxi, like, hey, throw me an alley-oop. What the fuck? Great passing.
The pass. I mean, we have to talk about the pass. The one that came from the wraparound one under the basket
with
to Batum in the corner.
With his left hand. With his offhand. Whip pass to the corner for Batum for a three, which was an unreal pass. He had another one. Once Wembanyama came out, it was around Wembanyama. Another one was just a really nice one to KJ Martin for a flush once Wemby stepped up. You know, just great effort. Deflections on defense. He had four steals in 22 minutes. I just love fresh legs in a game when everybody's dead tired. Him coming
especially
in
a guy like him, by the way, who's gonna use every single ounce of energy in the
absolutely
fresh legs and drive people fucking crazy.
I mean, there was one play one sequence where he fills the lane and breaks for the rim on a fast break, gets a layup out of it. Next play, he forces Keldon Johnson out of bounds by sliding his feet really well in a game where Trey Jones, over and over and over again, and he wasn't the only one, kept getting past the point of attack on defense, and they just could not keep anybody in front of him. Could not keep anybody in front of him, and then they started sending help, et cetera, et cetera. But like to slide your feet on Keldon like that, ended up spraining Keldon's ankle on the play. But just, he comes in, instant hustle, effort, athleticism. That shit matters. Size, physicality, his body, you know. Good for Nick to go to him because there just were not enough scoring threats. And Ricky can at least do what he did late in overtime, which was, oh, Maxie's getting, they're denying Maxie the ball.
I'm just going
to
go.
I guess nobody else is telling me what to do. I'm going to go one-on-one. And he got fouled and he went to the line, hit all his foul shots. It was a great, great, great game. I would give him the contract tonight.
They still have one slot.
It absolutely earned it. 100%. Like if he's going to play in this game, when Covington's still not playing, Melton's still not playing, you know, they're still, Nick Batum played 46 minutes tonight. Jesus Christ. They're still monitoring Lowry's minutes. Tobias hasn't played. Like they might need Ricky in the playoffs. If he's a two-way player,
at least
he cannot play in the playoffs.
Right.
So it's not now earlier in the season, it was like, well, he deserves it, and you can get him on a short-term, a team-friendly deal and that kind of thing. Now it's like, he needs to play. They need him to be out there as an option. Maybe not like a consistent every game in the eight-man rotation option, but this was big shit, and he's deserved a spot, and Daryl should be giving him a contract right now.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Big news from Big Barker. There's actually something else coming too, but Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Of course, if you go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, you get the process pup patches, right? You get two process pup patches only if you go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. Now these patches for a while, Tanner designed them, have been black and white, the black and white process pup patch. You now get two patches. One of them is black and white, and one of them is this brand new red, white, and blue. There it is, the red, white, and blue Process Pup patch. And you get stickers. You get Process Pup stickers along with it too. So thank you to Big Barker, ordering a bunch of new patches, bunch of stickers to give you. So you get a couple of stickers, you get the black and white Process Pup patch, you get the red, white, and blue Process Pup patch. If you're not, if you're just listening, look on Spotify or YouTube, you can see it, or look on our social. Big Barker is the only dog bed your dog should be sleeping on. It's the only dog bed that is a real bed. It's the only dog bed that is engineered by experts to keep your dog healthier. That's right. I know it sounds crazy, but if you slept in a bad bed, you wouldn't be healthy. You wouldn't be. You'd feel like shit every morning. Dogs sleep a lot. They need a good bed. Big Barker, you can look at it and see the difference. If you go to bigbarker.com/Ricky, see the dogs laying on it. It is supportive, supports your dog's joints. Proven by Penn Vet, who did a study to see, is this really true? It is. Reduction in pain severity, reduction in joint stiffness, improvement in joint function. As your dog gets older, arthritis creeps in, just like me, just like you. Your dog deserves the best life ever. And the best life ever includes good health, and Big Barker can help get it. And just so happens, looks good too. Comes a bunch of different colors, every size you could possibly need. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. You get the process pup patches, a 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. A 1-year at-home trial. If you don't like it, the dog doesn't like it, they'll give you a full refund and they'll even pay for the shipping. Big, handmade in the USA. That's right. Big Barker dog beds. Who's next?
Kelly fucking Oubre.
Now, did he?
I don't know if you've noticed this, Spike. I don't know if you've been paying attention. I don't know if you've checked the stats lately.
He's got three.
He's got three games of five assists or more, having now done them in back-to-back games, five against Memphis, five against San Antonio.
This is the most unlikely comeback in sports history.
What a beautiful thing we are witnessing. There are three games left. He has to get two games of five assists or more. What a beautiful. He gets it on a fast break lob to KJ. Absolutely. Absolutely does. He gets it on a fast break lob to KJ for an alley-oop that really sealed the deal. He does have a career high assist rate. Now, that's not saying much.
Yeah.
Not a guy who has tended to love passing the ball coming into the season. But I noticed it early on when I was drunk on this podcast, he has a taste for it. He's found the taste for assists.
Yep. It's another number. He loves stats. It's another stat he can pile up.
Look, he's the man, dude.
Oubre has been so good. He was so great.
They kind of went away from him in overtime a little bit. I think he might have just been fucking tired, which, you know, played 48 minutes. Had a couple great floaters over Wembanyama. Really nice touch inside. They went to him in the fourth a lot and just kept going to the rim, going to the rim, going to the rim. And his finger rolls come in there so soft, and it's just helpful to be able to do that. When he's driving in and there's, whether it's Zach Collins or Mamu Kumashvili or whoever, not Wembanyama that much, but like, you just trust him to be able to get a little shoulder into them and then rise up and usually, you know, soft off the glass. It's a beautiful thing. His ability to elevate that quickly with the ball in his hands and protecting it.
I wanted him to dunk on Wembanyama so bad. Yeah,
I know. He should have at least tried. It's a lot of respect.
Bad. And I think, can't believe they won this fucking game, man.
It's a great game to win.
What a good win.
His jumper has been falling lately. He was 2 of 5 last night from 3, 2 of 6 tonight. That's totally fine. 26.
I'm a little worried about the jumper falling, to be quite honest with you.
But, you know, they're not full health. He's still up a couple slots because of injuries and stuff.
Maybe.
He looks great, dude. Yeah, and there was one sequence early. He ran pick and roll with B-ball Paul. Paul rolling both times. The first time he takes himself because Wembanyama was playing the lob on B-ball. Next time down, pick and roll, same thing. Wembanyama steps up to Oubre, and then Oubre hits him with a little wraparound bounce pass to B-ball for a layup. It was heady. It was in control. It was manipulating a younger player using his IQ, which is something that, like, Oubre does not get credit for a lot. He's been awesome. He's been so helpful. I tweeted this the other day that he is the Sixers' best free agent signing of my life. If you don't include like undrafted free agents, like I really believe that to be true. Remarkable, helpful player. No matter what happens in the playoffs, he has been such an asset to this team. I will say, as we get into the criticism part of the podcast, he's got to stop fucking ball watching, dude. Him and Batum ball watch so much, and they just get beat behind them because they're just staring at the ball, and it kills me. There's so many easy buckets that they're giving up because they're just looking at the ball and not staying with their guy, and that's going to get into the Mike O'Connor argument we'll get to later.
Great game from Oubre, though. Great game from Oubre. By the way, also, I thought an excellent game from Paul Reed. I don't know what his stats look like.
Totally agree.
But I thought he did a great job with Wembanyama. There was one point very early in the game where he basically, like, I don't think he made the shot, but he pushed Wembanyama like 20 feet back. Yeah. He had the only complaint, and he got his, you know, he fouled out, but he played a lot of minutes, and that's a tough matchup. The only criticism for me of Paul Reed.
Say it.
Dunk that fucking ball.
Come on.
Dunk it.
I've really done a number on you with that.
Dunk it. Well, especially because he looks like a guy who should be dunking everything.
Sure. His vertical, 50 inches.
Dunk it.
B-ball had a great game. 31 minutes. Fouling out in 31 minutes against Wembanyama is completely fine. He's never going to be asked to play that many minutes in a playoff game. 11, 10, and 5. He was just great, man. A plus 10 in those minutes. He challenged Wemby a lot. Yep. God love him. Had a step back 16 footer blocked, which was great. He's been hitting his jumpers at the nail when they're wide open, just at the foul line. He rises up confident with them. I love that he feels empowered to do that. And they keep, he didn't you know, Nick Nurse not penalizing him for doing that when they're going in.
Rises up is a good way to describe B-ball Paul's form. It's not quite rising up, I don't think.
But it's, you know, it's his elbow rises in a fun way.
Something rises, yeah.
I thought he was great on Wembanyama defensively. Like, he's going to get his, man. Like, he hit some crazy shots. He was 5 of 10 from 3. Like, he dunked it. I think this was on Bamba, but he dunked it like a scoop with the left, and he was just like, oh, I'm just at the rim, so I'll just dunk. It's the guy, the stuff that guy does is unlike anything anybody else does. But I thought he did great on him, especially in foul trouble. He played with foul trouble since like the first moments of the second half. And he played a lot of minutes, and I thought he did great. I thought that sixth foul on the reach over the back was a little bit ticky-tack. He made some contact, so I don't blame the coaching staff not challenging it. I don't think it would have gotten overturned.
And it's not surprising they called it, but when you looked at it, you're like, oh man, he barely touched him. It's just like the look of it was always going
to
get called.
To me, that's a marginal contact situation.
Yeah.
There was one sequence, you know, Victor's doing his things. He's taking sidestep threes, he's hitting them, making plays in the perimeter or whatever, having like a crazy behind the back pass, whatever. And then B-ball's like, enough of this. And like 6 seconds into the shot clock, he steps into an above the break three and he nails it. And it's like, he's arguably not allowed to take that shot. He's definitely not allowed to take that shot that early in the shot clock. He's playing Victor Wembanyama, the most hyped prospect in 20 some years. And he hits it, and he's great, and he's delightful. I think he's been doing a great job of getting to his hooks off the glass, like sort of muscling left without like pushing off and getting up off the glass with his right off his right shoulder or right arm. Really, really nice stuff. And yeah, gotta dunk that. You're in transition. You're a big man. You're rim rolling. Don't get cute. Dunk the fucking ball.
Like, and you know what?
That can't happen. And I hope that like some assistant coach is like showering him with as much praise as we are, and then sitting him down, showing him that play 45 times in a row, and saying, "Dunk this shit in the playoffs. If you get blocked by like Giannis or Porzingis or whoever in the playoffs because you are going up soft and you don't realize you're 6'11", then there will be like hell to pay. You can't." Do it. You got to dunk it. We are a dunking podcast. B-ball Paul added 50 inches of vertical to his game, as he told us. That comes across, and he's just got to fucking dunk that, dude. I have no tolerance for it.
Also, I'd say completely forgetting about the possibility that it gets blocked from a momentum perspective.
Yeah.
You dunking the shit out of that and then hanging on the rim a little bit gets the team going more than you laying the ball in. It's just a completely different thing. That point in the game, you gotta dunk the ball. But aside from that, I thought he did an excellent job on Wemby, as you said. Batum also did an excellent job on Wemby when he was matched up with him. Very PJ Tucker-ish, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Batum's got that. He's just got that length. He reaches. He can poke it out. A lot of times he does a good job of doing it without fouling. He gets his body into you, so you're just getting uncomfortable and you feel like you're getting rushed. You can see him speeding him up. It was great. I mean, Batum kind of disappeared for a lot of the game, which is crazy to say because he played 46 minutes. But three of seven from deep. Every three felt huge. Every three felt absolutely huge. I don't think he scored going into the fourth. And then he hits a big three midway through a fourth once they... We're starting to blitz Maxey a little bit more. They didn't really blitz Maxey that much this game. They started doing it late. Then the last play of regulation, they send to it. Maxey, Batum pops, steps into it from the wing that give them the lead, which eventually they would give back on the champagne shot. And then man, that inbounds pass was
incredible.
Gorgeous. It was a touch pass. It is not the kind of play you see off an inbounds very often at all. Hits Maxey in stride up the seam for the layups and to send it to overtime. And then this didn't work obviously at the end of the first overtime, but I love that play call from Nick Nurse to get Oubre open in the corner at the end of the first overtime. He was open. That it was like 0.8, 0.9 seconds left on the shot clock. Good again for, on Nurse and the coaching staff for taking that timeout immediately. They knew that shot clock was winding down to even get an attempt to get a shot up there was huge. I thought it was a great pass, touch pass, beautiful. Like, he's got to be doing that for the rest of his career. He's got to be here forever, man. He's been great. He's been absolutely great. It was the full Nick Batum experience tonight. And in a game when, like, really he's going to be so valuable when Embiid's here, you can see them having chemistry together, etc. But like, just having a guy with that kind of skill set that competes at the defensively, that can still hit a three, that can pass the way he can.
By the way, I didn't think he was going to play tonight. I didn't think he was going to play tonight. Yeah.
I mean, they really needed him. It was a great Nick. I love the guy, man. I love Nick Nurse. I'm so happy he's here. Saved, like, getting PJ Tucker off this team so Batum could come, as Dan Ollinger pointed out on Twitter, was so massive for this team. They've been, that has helped immensely, especially in all the different machinations of who's been healthy and stuff. He's been great. Obviously not like a high scoring type of player at this point, but he can still hit those shots and he can still move really well on defense, make those passes. I've thoroughly enjoyed one of my favorite, like, journeyman Sixers of the process era.
Nick, please, in my best French accent, please do not retire. Please play one more year with these Sixers.
I don't love you starting to do accent works, 11 years into the podcast, but I will admit, I will come correct and say that was better than I expected. Fair's fair, and that was better than I expected.
I had one Batum thing, the pass.
He had a couple nice strips.
Yeah, I lost it. That's okay. It was a great game from him. Oh, he started because Nick Nurse looked at the starting lineup and saw Buddy Hield and said, I think they announced the starting lineup with Buddy Hield. And man.
Never mind. It's like when you're playing, not to go LeBron on this, but it's like when you're playing chess and you, like, make a chess move and then you don't pick up your hand. I haven't like picked it up yet. It's still here.
Yes.
That's Nick Nurse changing his starting lineup. Yeah, they were just really small. You could feel how small they were tonight. Like, B-ball would contest a shot and there was just nobody back there to really get a body on anybody. Ton of second chances, opportunity. But they fucking pulled it out. I want to give a shout out to KJ Martin, who I thought played a very solid game. What he does, he has
just, like, evolved into whatever this is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right, that's right. Whatever this is, I think, is exactly what he's done.
He is not ever trying to do too much. And it seems like he plays within the flow of the game particularly well, and seems to come up with a loose ball here and there that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And he is a good athlete. He will dunk it, yada, yada, yada. He's not particularly skilled, but he is kind of smooth, and I think he plays kind of smart too.
Yeah. He plays smart. He moves. He can pass on the short roll. I like that he's a lob threat. He can get his wide body into bigger guys. I thought he was very solid once B-ball fouled out. It's really just the jump. I've said it every time, but, like, he just has not a jump shot that you can trust. And so it'll be hard to play him in the playoffs unless there's a particular matchup, but, like, there's a lot of stuff that he does really well. And the one thing is just, he can even handle a little bit. Like, he can push the ball. He can push off a miss. He's just, like, and he really knows who he is, which it's always impressive when, like, Kenyon Martin had a very long, successful NBA career. And it's always impressive to me when that kind of kid is, like, a role player and knows his role and doesn't try to do too much from it. But if he develops a jump shot, he could play for me anytime.
How old is he? 25?
23.
Oh, it could happen still then.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
it could happen all the time. Everybody develop. The history of this podcast, name a bunch of Sixers that have developed jump shots from being non-shooters. Happens all the time. Happens forever.
TJ?
No, I don't think he has either. Everybody else kind of was there. Not a great Jeff Doughton game. Happy for him that he got signed for the rest of the season. Seems like Melton insurance and to not, like, overtax Lowry.
Not to bum anyone out, but Buddy Hield stinks.
It's tough.
Yeah.
He just really has to hit every
wide open one. Yeah.
When he's wide open. And I do trust him to do it. I think he played better tonight than he played against Memphis. And I do like when he goes after loose balls, and there's been better passing from him than I expected, but, like,
he does hustle. He's so slow, man. He's so slow.
He's definitely slow with the ball in his hands for sure. There was a time in the game when you're like, if Maxi Arubre is not doing everything, I don't know where the offense is going to come from. And you would want it to be Buddy. You would want there to be some, like, Buddy centered offense when you would go, like, okay, Seth Curry or JJ is going to rip off a like 8-0 run by himself based on like dribble handoffs and running him through screens and that kind of thing. And it just doesn't seem like he gets separation like that. And hopefully it happens when Embiid's rocked. We'll see.
Let's fucking go, man. I can't believe they won that fucking game. Let's go.
Buddy, by the way, is going to play, if he presuming he plays the last three games of the season, is going to play 84 games this year.
Wow.
Because of the trade. So I think that makes him the king of availability. So everybody that likes availability, I think that has to be your favorite player.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Availability. The best ability.
We are star.
Oh, wait, huh?
You know, the number one ability is availability, right?
That's the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process. K-S-E-B-E is how you spell it. 302-864-8643 or adam@processrealtor.com is how you get a hold of him. The housing market is, it's been crazy for 3 years now, 4 years. It hasn't settled down at all. Adam Kasebe is the lord of the Delaware beaches. He can get you a house down the shore in Delaware better than anybody else can. It's hard. It's hard. They up, down quickly. People bidding way over asking. If you need a good realtor, a real good realtor, you need the best realtor if you're going to buy a home at the Delaware beaches, and Adam Kasebe is the guy to help you. His team, based out of Long and Foster in Bethany Beach, can get you anywhere in Delaware beaches, from whether it's Rehoboth or Lewis or Bethany or Dewey, wherever you want to be, they can get you. Also, they cover all of Delaware. You want to buy a house in Wilmington or something? Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process. How about Ocean City, Maryland? Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process. And I know you're thinking, well, what if I want to buy a home in New Jersey or Pennsylvania? Can Adam Kasebe buy me that, help me buy that house? No, he can't, but he can help you with that process. What he can do, call Kasebe, 302-864-8643, or text him. Tell him where you're looking to buy, what your price range is, all those sorts of things. He will interview realtors in his giant Rolodex of realtors and get you the best one. So he's the only one you need. Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process. Also, you might be thinking, I've been going to the Jersey Shore my whole life. Why should I go to Delaware? Well, if you want to buy a home, property taxes way lower in Delaware. Also, crowds better. I prefer Delaware beaches. Once again, Adam Kasebe is official realtor of The Process, K-S-E-B-E. Phone 302-864-8643 or adam@processrealtor.com. Also, Mo Bamba is 5 inches taller than Paul Reed, maybe 6 inches taller than Paul Reed, but was way less capable against Wembanyama. Mo Bamba's played better recently, just in general, I guess. But
I've always liked him in theory. I like rim protection and I like stretch five. And especially against Wembanyama, if you can force him to cover a shooter so that the lane is open, that's obviously huge. But Bamba doesn't hit enough to sort of make that worthwhile. And I did like that he got a little chippy with Zach Collins. That was fun seeing him do it. But he's never gonna finish through contact. And it's just like, you're so big.
Yeah.
You're so big. You could if you wanted to. He doesn't want to. Tough. I think we should talk about the schedule.
Yes.
And the standings.
So here we go. So, wow, that's what's next on the rundown. It's amazing that you say that.
I got it tabbed right here.
Sixers are in seventh place in the Eastern Conference by themselves, a half game ahead of Miami.
Yep.
Now, Miami lost to Indiana tonight after storming back, but did lose. The Sixers are now one full game behind the Pacers.
Yep.
Now, the thing that kind of sucks is they would lose the tiebreaker to Miami and they would lose the tiebreaker to the Pacers. So they have to finish a game ahead of either of those. The other thing is, you know, look, Indiana has to lose basically two games, you know, for this to happen. And the Sixers have to go, how many games have left? Four? So they have to go 3-1.
Sixers have 3 games left.
Three games left, really. Okay, so Sixers have to win all three and Pacers have to lose two of those three. Getting the sixth seed, while unlikely, man, if you can get it's still possible they could get that the Cavs are in the three. Man, it would be nice to get the Cavs in the three. I don't fucking care because I think they're going to beat whoever they play anyway.
Yeah,
that's my
still have a chance to pass the Cavs. The Cavs are only one game up on Indiana.
Oh, wow.
Cleveland having lost three in a row, seven out of the last 10.
Okay, so you're looking at the standing. So
yeah, Cavs just have an easy schedule the rest of the way. Aside from that Pacers game, which will be a big game,
yep.
Cavs have Hornets and Grizzlies.
Okay, and then, man, the Bucks are falling apart too. I mean, what are the Sixers?
Falling apart.
Sixers are probably, what, four games out from second place?
It's tough
place?
Because a couple of, if like, the Bucks at two to Miami at eight are separated by four games. And man, a couple of those like swing games that the Sixers got snake bit on, any of them, and they'd be hosting a playoff series. Like there's a couple of them here and there over the course of the season. Some based on refs, some based on like crazy fluky shooting luck. It would have been really nice. But
well, the Sixers felt like they didn't win for 2 months and they're somehow three games behind the Bucks for second place.
How
did that happen?
But they've won five games in a row and they got three very winnable games left. Orlando's going to be tough, obviously. Orlando currently the three seed in the East. My Orlando Magic, the three seed in the East.
I wouldn't mind playing Orlando.
I think I almost guaranteed to win my bet of Orlando winning the division over Miami, which is going to feel good for me.
Yeah.
But man, it'd be nice to avoid the play-in. I hear what you're saying about the momentum of the play-in taking us into a game against, if you win that one,
I'm
taking
just
us
not
into a game
scared
against
of it.
Probably
I don't mind
Milwaukee.
Missing it, but I'm just not scared of it. That's my,
I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair. But yeah, the Knicks have scuffled. Orlando has been fine. Cleveland scuffled a lot. Milwaukee scuffled a lot. It's been a weird morass for the two through eight. So anybody could really come out of that. Orlando could still be the two seed, which is insane.
So Greg says on Twitter, I'm a day one Ricky listener, and he is. I can assure you of this. I've been seeing Greg's tweets since the beginning. And I have a question for the pod. Which game, Detroit or Brooklyn, do we botch just to miss the sixth seed?
Yeah.
I know my boys. There's no way this team wins both of those games.
No, you're right. You're right.
Which one? It's Detroit.
Detroit is coming up next.
Because they've already lost to Brooklyn.
Brooklyn is the last game of the season, and I feel like they're not... To even put themselves in a position to make the playoffs last game of the season doesn't seem right. I don't think they would lose to Brooklyn. Brooklyn is really, really bad. Although they did beat either Cleveland or Milwaukee recently, but they lost to the Kings 107-77 tonight.
That's not good.
That's a rough one.
Yeah.
But they have a shot, and it's because they've won five in a row, and they look good without Joel. This is my first pod. My first Joel is here pod, although he didn't play tonight, so it's not fully there. I love him. I'm glad he's here. They're better when he's around. I missed him. I'm happy he's back. He looks pretty good. He doesn't
he looks
look
great.
100%, but no, he looks pretty good.
He doesn't look 100%, but I don't think it's the knee that is keeping him from being 100%.
No,
I think
it's conditioning.
Rhythm and conditioning.
And conditioning, exactly.
When we did the pod after the Oklahoma City game, me and MOC, that was the relief that I felt was, he's not hobbling. He's not grabbing at his knee, you know. He's not even fidgeting with the brace all that much. Speaking
of... Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I wasn't worried about it.
I
wasn't worried about it. Just like we've been around Joel long enough to just like, you kind of know when he's going to be him and when he's not going to be him. And this whole time I just felt like he's going to come back and he's going to be fine. And he is. And it's been a weird year, but they have a coach that is going to put them in positions to succeed. They have a bunch of guys that really fit in with what Maxey and Joel do well together. It would be nice if one of Covington or Melton came back and played a couple. Can Covington come back next game? Please, like this is
Melton would be nice.
Yeah, anybody would be nice. One of them would be nice. Both is greedy.
Also, MOC,
they just have a shot, man. They just really fucking have a shot, and it could be this year. The East is, you know, deep as far as top eight. Anyone could beat anybody, but also very vulnerable outside of Boston. So, just get on the other side of the bracket and win two rounds. That's all I'm fucking asking.
Mike O'Connor mentioned it, did an article and writes to RickySanchez.com. By the way, you can subscribe to Mike O'Connor's articles by just going to writesRickySanchez.com, clicking subscribe. That way you get them emailed to you. But he did mention, he says, one could look back at recent history to see examples of superstars having monster playoff runs, having just missed time right before the playoffs. Steph Curry missed the final 3 weeks of the 2022 regular season and began that playoff run, which of course ended in a championship by coming off the bench and playing 20 minutes per game. Chris Paul missed 5 weeks from mid-February to late March in 2022 and was excellent in the Suns' first round series against the Pelicans that year. In 2017, Kevin Durant missed all of March and returned only for the last three regular season games and went on to win finals MVP. Mike, it's like, I don't want to say it's, I'm just, it's kind of.
Could be the year.
It's feeling pretty good.
Could be the goddamn year.
We're the team nobody wants to play.
The first playoff run was the 16-game win streak going into the playoffs.
Yes.
When Embiid broke his face.
That one was
on Markel Fultz's shoulder.
Yeah.
That was a primarily like Ben-led winning streak. But if they handle their business, they will be on an 8-game winning streak going into the playoffs.
Speaking of Embiid, we discussed on the last pod you were on the Paul George rumors that the Sixers will go after Paul George, who has not signed an extension with the Clippers. Paul George has a podcast and was talking about Joel Embiid, and here is how the conversation went.
He's doing a Euro. Like, what big man fucking got the Euro down? Like,
he's funny too, bro.
And he's funny.
Yeah, he's in it. The best part, I think it was he like made a play and Pat Bev could see like he was about to hit him with the, and so Pat like went and grabbed him and he's like, no. Yeah. He was like, okay.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Joel, man, and he's someone that, you know, we got a good relationship. I got a good relationship with Joel. Every All-Star, we chop it up. We got to get the big fan. We need a bigger seat. Definitely got to get a bigger seat.
I mean, that's your buddy. Call him up.
I definitely am a big fan of Joel. Let me put Coach Jackie in.
So, there you go.
A little breadcrumb.
Yeah.
A little breadcrumbing.
You know what,
Paul? Sprinkle it on there.
I know you and Joel have a really good relationship. Do you think it would be better if you had 4 years... at $200 million.
Yeah, that might help. That help my relationship with really anybody.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So
it's nice. Had a big win over the Cavs tonight on a game winning shot at the buzzer over Evan Mobley.
After they benched James Harden in the fourth quarter, by the way.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yes. Wow. That was when they went on the run. So
wow.
Just something to keep an eye on.
And he said there was a question. Did you see this? There was a question that somebody asked, a reporter asked Paul George about like, how
do you get James Harden going?
James Harden more involved. And he's like, I'm not the coach. I don't know.
Yep.
It is over there. Come on. Come on home.
So on the last pod, you weren't here. First of all, I just mentioned Mike O'Connor. Thrilling to have Mike O'Connor back on the pod. Mike has been with us for 3.5 years or something, writing for The Rick. He came on right around the same time as CJ, I think. And excellent writer for us, has gone through a lot in the last few years. We love Mike. He's kept writing through all of it, but having him back on the pod was great. But he did take aim at one other Mike, one Mike Levin. Here is the social clip that CJ produced that says what Mike O'Connor had to say.
I had like a Sloan panel debate with Mike about overhelping because he wants like the Brett Brown defense, and we've seen that fail in the playoffs so many times. I'm team overhelp all the way.
Tell me why Mike is wrong.
Brett Brown's defense is basically single coverage, huge drop on pick and rolls, stay home on shooters, pray that guy doesn't make too many mid-range jump shots. Over the course of a 7-game series, all great players in the NBA are going to cook you if you stay in that defense. It's fine in the regular season, but when you get to the highest levels of playoff basketball, you have to play aggressive defensive schemes. There's a reason Miami plays all these wacky, crazy defenses in the playoffs. It works. You have to throw bodies at these people. And like I was saying about the Celtics, I want that team to have to make so many decisions every single play. I want two coming at Tatum. I want the ball swinging to Brown. I want Brown to have to think, where's my next read? What do I have to do? That's never happening in the Brett Brown defense. The Brett Brown defense is pick and roll, mid-range jump shot. It might go in, it might not.
No help. No help.
The reason why the defense is bad lately, such a nothing play. Bend the guy in front of you.
No help.
Too often, just like stands and watches other guys.
No help.
We may as well try.
No help.
Is it going to work? I don't think it's going to work. It didn't work.
Mike, your response to Mike O'Connor.
So, I mean, so those were good points. I just don't agree that the Sixers have or have ever had the personnel to play that way. They're not Miami. They do not play that way. If you had Bam Adebayo as center or Nick Claxton or something like that, then yeah, and you had switchable guys that could just fly around, Cody Martin flying at people then fine. But there are Tobias Harris switching his hips and having to help and be 20 feet away from the guy he's supposed to cover is bad. I don't disagree with the fact that you should throw different looks at them sometimes, but I would, the percentage of times when I would send help is way, way, way lower than Nick Nurse does it. I think tonight is a great example of that. You double Wembanyama over and over again. He kicks it out to shooters. They came very close to losing the game several times because of it. Maxey leaves Champagne wide open to just stand next to Wembanyama. The ball 4 feet above his head. He's not getting to it. It's an easiest kick out in the world. That's a wide open three. Like, MOC's right in that great NBA players will be able to beat one-on-one coverage a lot of the time, but they're also very able to make a kick out to a wide open shooter. And if those guys are in the lineup at that time, they are in there because they can hit that shot. If it was Matisse over there, then like, yeah, send help off of Matisse's guy all the time. Like, force that guy to do it. There's just not that many guys that are playing heavy NBA minutes that can't hit wide open threes, including on a team as bad as the Spurs. Devontae Graham hit a ton of threes. Wembanyama hit his. Champagne hit his. Malachi Branham hit his. Like, they lost this. They almost lost this game because they kept doing it. And MOC thinks about it like, oh, you're making the defense think. But to me, it's much easier to be an offensive player in that situation, and you're making the defense think. Sorry, I might have said it the opposite way. He thinks you're making the offense think. I think you're making the defense think when you send that much double. Because then it's like everybody's helping on the roller, and then it's Maxey and Joel both tagging the roller at the same time, and there's a guy wide open in the corner. I don't think there's enough connective tissue to send that many double teams as much as they are, to pinch in at the corners as much as they are. To me, it's like there's just like a do-it-to-do-it type of thing that the Sixers get into all the time, and they don't have the personnel to recover. That's how I feel.
So we're going to have this debate before the playoffs start. I think that we got to just get you guys on the pod together. The only thing I would raise about personnel.
Yeah.
If the Miami Heat can do it with Kevin Love and Tyler Hero, the Sixers in their form of, in their normal form of having Batum and Melton and Maxey, these are all players who are physically capable.
Well, that's why I think that Miami's better without Hero a lot of the time, is because
they play well with Love too, though. I mean,
but at least Love is big. And I don't think they do it that much with Love on the floor. Like, Duncan Robinson is quicker than people give him credit for, and he's long, so he can get out there and contest. But it's usually like it's Highsmith. Those are the kinds of players that Miami succeeds with guys that are willing to like make quick twitch athleticism plays, like Cody Martin, like Haywood Highsmith, like, you know, Terry Rozier, Jimmy, Bam, all those guys. I think that it should just be factored in the kind of personnel on the floor of who is on your team that you feel comfortable helping with that scheme. I don't love the Brett Brown scheme of dropping. I would rather switch. I would rather have a guy, you know, you can't do it against everybody, but it's just got to be more of a thought process of like, at least in my ideal defense, it would be switch a lot, switch most, so you don't have to defend pick and roll and drop. And then who has the ball on the other team that is penetrating that you feel the need to double off of? But tonight is an example of like, they just couldn't stay in front of Trey Jones. They couldn't stop dribble penetration at the point of attack. They kept having to send help. That is a lot of it. Like, Oubre did not play a great defensive game. Ball watching kills me. Tobias does it too when he's there. They just got beat on that a lot of times. And I don't know why, like, MOC's ideal offense cannot be the like, yeah, pick and roll mid-range jumper. That should be it, right? Pick and roll mid-range jumper. That's not the offense he wants. It feels very disconnected to me that people that like to send help, coaches that like to send help, are not coaching to get those kinds of shots on the other end. Like, on offense, our goal is shots at the rim and open three-pointers, ideally in the corner. So why on defense are we selling out to prevent the kinds of mid-range shot that we're trying to avoid on the offensive end? That's my feeling.
I have one more important question for you before we get to Doc Rivers. I will do it right after LL Pavorsky. The Race to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, the original sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I won't say the name of this person, but I met a person, a Ricky guy, in Fishtown today while I was taking a walk. And he looked at me and he goes, I think it's about time I visited LL. I got to be number 390 or whatever. And look, I was going to tell him about the sex thing, but I let that go. But I said, how long have you been, you and your girlfriend been dating? And he's like, almost 5 years. I'm like, yeah, it's time, buddy. He will be one of the many thrilled customers of LL Pivorsky Jewelers. Why are they thrilled? They're thrilled because he treats you amazing. You get great customer service, one-on-one, a truly good person who isn't going to pressure you, is going to teach you about, is going to answer any question you have, take as much time as you want, no pressure, great product, great price, great guy. LL Pivorsky Jewelers. You're also, here's another good thing. You go to LL for an engagement ring, you got a jeweler for the rest of your life. You need your wedding bands, you go to LL. You need an anniversary present, you go to LL. You need a Valentine's Day present, you go to LL. LL has been in business for over 36 years at the same place at 707 Walnut, and you're only able to do that if you do the right thing by the right people or if you're a front for the mob. Is he a friend for the mob? I don't think so. So he must be doing the right thing. If you want to make an appointment to get an engagement ring from LL, give him a call, 215-627-2252. Email him, lee@llpivorsky.com. Tweet at him, @LLPivorsky. He supports the charities that we love, Providence Animal Center and Mama T's Community Fridge, LL Pivorsky Jewelers.
You're engaged, you're engaged, you're engaged, your mother's engaged, your grandmother's engaged.
A good one. That's a good one. So, Mike,
There's a point I wanted to make. It's a shout out to Follow the Water in the chat, pointing out that they also run a lot of zone defense to hide guys like Kevin Love, and he at least rebounds the ball very well to make himself valuable on that end.
One name we haven't, you mentioned briefly, but we're 53 minutes into the podcast, and we've barely talked about, is a player who has been out for a few games, is one Tobias Harris. Mm. Seems to be guys are fucking thriving left and right. Tobias over there in street clothes. Mm-hmm. You think about the starting lineup. If Melton is back, even if Melton is back.
Has there been any indication of Melton being back?
No, just hoping. Let's say Melton's not back.
Yeah.
Do you think a better lineup for the Sixers is Maxi, fucking Lowry. Kyle Lowry, Oubre, Batum, Embiid, or Tobias in there for Oubre?
I actually like Oubre coming off the bench very much.
Yeah.
Generally. Melton is back, then I would go Maxi, Lowry, Melton, Batum, Embiid, and bring Tobias off the bench. That would be better for me.
Leave him on the bench. What about that as an option?
Tobias cannot at this point. There's been too much information in the whole career of Tobias Harris, and B, like the way this team has played without him, that they move the ball better when he's not there. He doesn't need to be grandfathered in to A, the starting lineup, and certainly B, the closing lineup, when he's not playing well. And it just feels like way too often, every coach that's ever had Tobias writes his name in Sharpie on both ends. And it's frustrating. If he's not playing well, he does not need to be in the game.
It's time. He's going to leave. I know he'll feel embarrassed by it. It's time. It's time. I'm now an Oubre fucking guy. This is what you did to me, Tobias. Yeah. I'm a fucking Oubre guy now.
You are an Oubre guy.
We're doing Oubre t-shirts. I'm thinking of other Oubre t-shirts. I'm just like, let's fucking go.
Nice. It's nice that there's been times when both of us have gone other ways. Like I've been high on guys and then, you know, eventually over time realize that they're not going to figure it out. But rarely in the course of one season do you go for as low as you were on Oubre coming in to as high as you are on Oubre right now. And I think it's nice.
Yeah. Well, I am often cast as stubborn. It's not that I'm stubborn. I'm decisive, but I can switch. You know, I'm just, if I'm in, I'm in. If I'm out, I'm out. I'm in on Oubre now. I'm in on him. If we don't ever get another call for the rest of the time, because he called all those refs bitches and they're found. I'm fine with it. It was worth it. It's about the journey.
He hasn't been getting to the line that much. And it does feel like discrimination for a moment in a different game. I get in other games, in the same game that you do that, I get you're like, hey, you're not going to get calls. But for it to be happening for weeks to come, I think even after you apologized in a very like humbling way, he should be getting those calls, and they're just like, "Fuck you, man. Fuck you. You say one mean thing to me, to one of us. You say it to all of us. It's like, get the fucking ref solidarity out of here." I was my league started, the one that I also play in. Here we go. I coach.
Oh wait, sorry.
When I play like this, I don't play like that. When I play, I'm pretty intense.
Mike playing basketball.
I'm in my prime, honestly.
Sign me. I've been playing well. I have. I'm going to say it. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm not afraid to come on my own podcast and say that I've been playing really well lately. Okay. I had a very clean strip at half court on somebody's blind side. Took it from him, handed it from, like he was handing me a cupcake and I was taking it delicately. Just took it from him. Ref, obviously on the blind side, called a foul, couldn't see it. Not a chance. It was such the wrong call. The guy that I took it from said, yeah, clean as hell. The ref, middle-aged guy, total loser. The guy goes to the line that I did not foul, but they called a foul on. He hits the first foul shot. And the ref says, ball don't lie. The ref says, ball don't lie about his own call.
He's going to get fired. I'm sorry. You can't do that.
Unbelievable. I said out loud, yeah, it's not cool when a ref says it. Such a loser. Oh my God. What a piece of shit. Fuck that guy.
So I don't know if you've heard this.
Yeah.
But the Milwaukee Bucks were 30-13 under Adrian Griffin.
Interesting.
And they fired him.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the person they replaced him with is a coach named Doc Rivers. Now, Doc was called by ownership to give them some, you know, some tips, some just sort of advice. He was an advisor for the Milwaukee Bucks. And when they fired Adrian Griffin, Doc Rivers hadn't even imagined that Adrian Griffin would get fired. B hadn't even imagined that he would be coach. And he definitely wasn't trying to get Adrian Griffin fired so he could get another coaching job.
It was all above board.
Yeah. Nobody even thought of any of this. I didn't even know he was my son. I'm Jerry Colangelo. He's right. Brian Colangelo. I'm not even involved. So
75 candidates. We picked him blind. We did a voice modulating software like it was someone in witness protection. And it just happened to be Doc Colangelo who they hired afterwards.
So 30-13 under Adrian Griffin, their record under Doc Rivers after they blew a, I think, 17-point lead tonight against the Knicks is 15-17, which is bad, is a bad record for Doc Rivers. He was talking about how they're playing on the road at a post-game press conference. And
by the way, he wouldn't wish this on anybody.
Anybody, yeah.
I think it's important to note that.
Yes.
Getting a job midway through after having to be a broadcaster for the first time in 25 years.
Wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Terrible.
Terrible.
So here's what Doc said.
It's funny. I've actually been sitting back and watching everything. Not just our players, but our travel crew, everything. And I've made a lot of notes. I will say that. I won't share that. But we don't bring the necessary professionalism, seriousness on the road. And that's something that we can fix. That's something we're going to have to fix.
Do you feel like that just gets cleaned up in the playoffs? Like, have you seen that in the past?
I'm not concerned. The playoffs are a new beast, but I'm looking at it for the long run, too. I mean, it's not just for now. Like, we got to be a better road team. And it's funny.
So,
You know that if Doc, I'm reclining now.
Yeah, he's taking notes on the road crew.
If Doc starts a sentence with the words, "It's funny," you are about to hear the least funny thing you've ever heard in your life. Nothing about that is funny.
No, not at all. Aside from the fact that a grown man who defends the fact that he was named one of the 15 best NBA coaches of all time is blaming their lack of professionalism on the road. On the road crew?
Road crew.
What is that? Is
friggin' that Road Dogg and Jesse James are not carrying their weight around here.
Is it the flight attendants? Are they not bringing the peanuts out quick enough? What is the
equipment manager,
problem?
Badass Billy Gunn, doing a terrible job.
And the way that he's talking about it is like a CEO who was brought in to assess all of the different aspects of the business. You know, let's take some time, take a step back, look at how all of our departments are operating. No, Doc, you are the head coach of the basketball team who has one of the four best players in the NBA, just traded for another superstar to win a title this year. I have an idea. Instead of taking notes on the road crew, you should make the team play better.
No.
Or at least as good as they played when Adrian Griffin was the coach.
That can't be it.
The guy who you got fired.
It's so bad, dude. I'm so happy he's not here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He is such a cartoon character of the kind of person that we have always said that he was. He's throwing everyone under the bus constantly. He acts like he's auditing the team.
Dude, this
and
is,
takes no responsibility for being the coach of it.
Tell me if he's always shared a little bit of Doug Collins.
Yes.
But these quotes are really Doug.
Absolutely.
Really end of the line with the Sixers Doug.
Absolutely. I would fucking kill for them to lose in the first round.
Oh.
I kind of don't. Us. I still don't want it to be against the Sixers because there would be so many stakes to that. I can't have.
Yes.
I need the Sixers to be playing someone else, Cleveland or whatever, so that I can then be very invested in Milwaukee against anybody else, Indiana, whoever. If it's Sixers Bucks, I will not be able to breathe because I will want it so bad.
It'll be the most I've ever wanted a Sixers playoff series.
I know. It'll be bad.
Yeah.
You know that the first thing he's going to say, end of season press conference, he's going to say, nobody picked us for anything. Yeah. The Bucks were nothing before I got here. You know, nobody even thought we'd make the playoffs. And he's absolutely going to blame the idea that he took the job midseason on everything. 100%.
You know, the number one ability is availability.
That's right. That's
John,
exactly right.
John
says, if it's the ultimate game, why do they play it again next year?
John the says in the guy. Chat, Jonathan says in the chat, imagine we come down from 3-1 against the Bucks. Oh my God. I would die.
Go down 3-1 against the Bucks, I would not be alive anymore. That was the problem. I wouldn't live to see the end of the series.
I would be on the podcast without any clothes on, just drenching myself in champagne as if I had won a championship. I will have the goggles on that the Phillies had, like when they celebrate.
We should get those goggles and
pour
spray down.
Pour champagne all over myself. Drench myself in it.
Naked. Oh man. What a guy. What a singular talent.
A couple of quick emails. This from Rob, writes RickySanchez@gmail.com. My wife wants to hump Kelly Oubre, and how can I blame her? He might be the best looking dude in the NBA. Anyway, hi Spike, Mike, and CJ. I'm thinking about the NBA finals and a matchup with the Nuggets and comparing players. There we fucking go. Yes, you are, buddy. Yes, you are. It was written. If Embiid equals Jokic and Maxey equals Murray, is it crazy to say that Oubre equals Aaron Gordon? Super athletic glue guys can shoot you in and out of a game. And of course, both handsome. Am I crazy? I think Oubre actually has an edge over Gordon. They're not similar players really at all.
No, I mean, like, they can both like sort of muscle their way to the rim. Gordon and Jokic have developed such a really nice, weak side lob.
Yeah.
Backdoor kind of routine. And that's what Oubre started the season doing with Joel.
A lot of cuts.
And getting a lot of those cuts. And he sort of went away from it as he's become more of a focal point offensively. But hopefully we can go back to that defensively, or once the playoffs come in, they're more full strength. But I don't know that that's quite the one-on-one way to look at it. It'd be, you know, when it was, we don't talk about Sixers Nuggets playoff. That's such a, it's so far down the road.
We'll talk about it.
I just had, I've never played chess. just like press the parachute button, jump out of a plane. Moment, eject button. I don't want to do it. So ask us again in 2 months and we can compare the Sixers and Nuggets if they're playing each other in the NBA Finals.
Non-basketball question. With the impending U.S. Civil War, who would you rather the city of Philadelphia align with? One, New York, Boston, and New England. Two, D.C. and the Mid-Atlantic states. Three, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and the Rust Belt. I like the idea of being the capital city of the Rust Belt, but we probably have more in common with New England. Thoughts?
This is in the movie Civil War, the Alex Garland movie?
No, he's literally asking in our impending Civil War.
Oh.
If there were a Civil War, who would you want to align yourself with? I mean, we have to beat New York, Boston, and
maybe. I wouldn't mind taking Baltimore and going to the Rust Belt, though. It feels more...
Weather's better.
I don't know.
Weather's definitely better. And final... Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep them for the next pod. We got plenty of pods. We can just end this one. It's fucking late. There are two overtimes. I got to go to bed. I got work tomorrow.
It's so good that they won this game, dude.
It was a great win. It was a great win.
Obviously, the Spurs team has been way, way better over the last couple of months, even with like Vassell out and Sochan out. Wembanyama's just really fucking good. But the Sixers were missing everybody, and Maxey scored 52. And Oubre and Batum and Ricky fucking Council, man, did enough. I wanted CJ to be bursting onto the camera to tell us that Ricky got the full contract, but Daryl, deliver.
Come
enough
on,
already.
Daryl. Yeah, what's he waiting for? Danny Green?
To me, it's got to be the holdup is the just the idea that
somebody
could
be
taking up money for next season.
Yeah,
but next season is next season. You'll figure it out. Like Ricky might play playoff minutes. If he came into this game, he might come into a game in a playoff where he matters.
Come on,
like,
Daryl. We're gonna say come on, Daryl. And then by the way, next year when they can't sign somebody, and
come on, Daryl.
Yeah, we're gonna be
or it's gonna be like B-ball Paul waved. Come on, Daryl.
Yeah. Well, remember the B-ball Paul contract is unguaranteed if they don't get past the first round.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Which is a fun little wrinkle that we haven't talked about in a while.
No, we have not. So, big win. Love it. 5 in a row. It's the year. We'll talk to you next time. When do we have? Wednesday, I think we have a pod, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 games left. We are very close, dangerously close to having made it through yet another Sixers season alive.
Unbelievable. They said it couldn't be done.
Couldn't be done.
They said it couldn't be done. All right. We'll talk to you next time. Are you down with TTP?
Then I won't fuck with you. You know the thing.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.